Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we're going to read both verse 83 and 84. And that just leaves one more verse, and the whole section is done. But that verse 85 is a long one. Okay. Adhyatma Paroksham Idam.
Adhyatma Paroksham.
Let's try again. Adhyatma paroksham idam. Is that a different verse? 83. Oh. No wonder. No wonder. Okay. That's 85. Okay, great. We have you longer. You're not finished yet. Etad adhyatma paroksham. Gitam devarshinanagha. Yakshravayad yakshrinuyat. Salingena vimuchate. Etat adhyatma paroksham. Gitam devarshinanagha. Yakshravayad yakshinuyat. Salingena vimuchate. Etat. This. Adhyatma. Spiritual. Paroksham. Authorized descriptions. Gitam. Narrated. Deva Rishina. By the great sage Narada. Anagha. O spotless Vidura. Yaha. Anyone who. Shravayat. May describe. Yaha. Anyone who. Shinuyat. May hear. Saha. He. Lingena. From the bodily concept of life. Vimuchate. Becomes delivered. Translation, my dear Vidura, one who hears this narration concerning the understanding of the living entity's spiritual existence, as described by the great sage Narada, or who relates it to others, will be liberated from the bodily conception of life. How's everyone feeling? Liberated from the bodily conception? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This material creation is the spirit soul's dream. Not only that. Actually, all existence in the material world is a dream of Mahavishnu, as the Brahma Samhita describes. Yat karanarna vajale bhajatisma yoga nidram ananta jagadanda saroma kopaha. This material world is created by the dreaming of Mahavishnu. The real factual platform is the spiritual world, but when the spirit soul wants to imitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is put into this dreamland of material creation. After being in contact with the material modes of nature, the living entity develops thus subtle, and gross bodies. When the living entity is fortunate enough to associate with Sri Narada Mahamuni or his servants, he is liberated from this dreamland of material creation and the bodily conception of life. The second text 84 carries on. Translation, this narration spoken by the great sage Narada is full of the transcendental fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, this narration, when described, certainly sanctifies this material world. It purifies the heart of the living entity, and it helps him attain his spiritual identity. One who relates this transcendental narration will be liberated from all material bondage and will no longer have to wander within this material world. Purport. As indicated in verse 79, Narada Muni advised King Prachinibhari to take to devotional service rather than waste time performing ritualistic ceremonies and fruitive activities. The vivid descriptions of the subtle and gross bodies in this chapter are most scientific, and because they are given by the great sage Narada, they are authoritative. Because these narrations are full of the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they constitute the most effective process for the purification of the mind. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed, Chaitadarpanamarjanam, the more we talk of Krishna, think of Krishna, and preach for Krishna, the more we become purified. This means we no longer have to accept a hallucinatory, gross and subtle body, but instead attain our spiritual identity. One who tries to understand this instructive spiritual knowledge is delivered from this ocean of nescience. The word parameshcham is very significant in this connection. Parameshcham is also called Brahmaloka. It is the planet on which Lord Brahma lives. The inhabitants of Brahmaloka always discuss such narrations so that after the annihilation of the material world, they can be directly transferred to the spiritual world. One who is transferred to the spiritual world does not have to go up and down within this material world. Sometimes spiritual activities are also called parameshcham. I've been studying Tattvasandarbha in preparation for a very exercising seminar in Tattvasandarbha. And the first eight verses of Tattvasandarbha are Mangalacharana verses. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita there's mention by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami of what are some of the standard literary standard elements that go into a Mangalacharana. And one of them, of course, Mangalacharana comes at the beginning. Here this isn't in the beginning, it's well into the text itself. But the same principle of offering benedictions. I can't remember the Sanskrit ashirvad, I think, but I'm not sure that's a term that means like that. In any case, offering benedictions. There are texts, certainly there's texts, even in non-transcendental literature, that if you do this, you get that. Karmakanda rituals are certainly prone to, if you do this, you get that benediction. So naturally, Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't say if this is spoken by Maitreya. It could very well be that it's Suta Goswami speaking this verse in relation to, Maitreya. It's a Maitreya Vidura discussion. But in any case, whoever's saying it, it's a benediction. And the benediction isn't a mundane one, it's a transcendental one. And there's two main parts to the benediction, becoming attached to Krishna and becoming released from the material conception of life. So while the subject matter is not 10th canto Bhagavatam, it's not Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, nor is it another section of Srimad Bhagavatam describing Lord Narayana's direct exchange with the four Kumaras, for example. This is an allegory. It's a fictitious King Paranjana, so forth and so on. And then Nara's explanation that fictitious King Paranjana is actually King Prachinibari. It's the spirit soul implicated in matter. And the transcendental knowledge, it's allegorical rendering aimed at transcendental knowledge. What does transcendental knowledge mean? Knowledge that's beyond this world. Knowledge that's beyond this world cannot, emphasis, cannot be attained by mental speculation. You can't stretch the mind and stretch the mind and stretch the mind and stretch the mind and then reach that which is beyond the mind. By definition, it's beyond the purview of ascending process. It must be coming and descending process. It's from, I mentioned this the other day, a transcendental source or apurusheya shabda. There's the purusha, and there's apurusha. Purusheya is from a mundane authority. Shabda, praman, pramana means literally. We know what pramana means. It's evidence. Literally, it means from a valid source. Words spoken from a valid source or an authorized source. Maybe I didn't say it here. When in Chicago, we were Naperville, attending a program that was hosted by the husband or the father in the family is a United Airlines employee. So if I want to know is the United Airlines flight such and such on time, I can go to a customer service representative and ask, and they can check their computer. And that's a purusheya shabda, a source of valid knowledge about something that's worldly. They can tell me. Is it on time or delayed or whatever the situation is? At least according to the information they have in their computer. And 30 seconds later, they could have another set of information and then relay that. But that's a valid source of knowledge rather than asking, you know, one of the other people standing in the room. Is the plane on time or late? Mm-hmm. Or they may say, I know. So then there's opurusheya, infallible, beyond the fallibilities of living being. What are the fallibilities of living being? The four defects. We know what they are. So an apurusheya source is beyond those defects. So that's Krishna. Or one who has heard from Krishna, then repeats what Krishna says. So the disciplic succession. That's an apurusheya source, provided there's transparent transmission, no editing allowed, just transparent transmission. That's apurusheya. So knowledge of transcendence is knowledge of the soul and knowledge of Krishna, both of which are beyond the purview of the ascending process to know. By the association of Narada, back to the message, by the association of Narada, not only King Prachinibari, but because of the mercy of Vyasadeva who compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, someone who speaks the message of Srimad Bhagavatam in an authorized manner, and someone who hears that narration can get the same benefit. What's the benefit? Two, release from the bodily conception of life. That's what the first verse is saying. And back to Godhead. That is, so the next message is, those who are practiced in this method will be liberated from all material bondage and will no longer have to wander in this material world. Because there's potencies within the subject matter. Prabhupada makes reference to the first verse of Shikshastakam, Chetha Darpana Marjanam. So we normally hear and think of that verse in relation to the holy name. Pram Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Nam Nam Akari Bahudanda Jasarva Shaktis. The holy name is being spoken of. Prabhupada, not generously, but completely appropriately, includes hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the same category, Chaita Darpana Marjanam category. Why? Because the topic is about Krishna. That's what transcendental sound vibration is. It's in relation to Krishna. And it's, you know, connecting back to the question asked by the sages of Naimisharanya, Canto 1, Chapter 1, asked of Sutta, now that Krishna has gone where religious principles have taken shelter, and the answer is in Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, transcendence is touched, and when transcendence is touched, then certainly religious principles are protected. So stay in constant touch. How do you do that? Continue to regularly hear. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam literally means eternally, like non-stop. That's a good program. And if someone can't or doesn't have the capacity or spirit to non-stop, then the more liberal definition or rendering of Nityam means regularly. Regularly. Regularly means daily. Or, you know, for some extended period of time each day, depending upon one's circumstance. We may not have the patience for that. But the potency, so back to the question, are you feeling free from the bodily conception of life? Maybe not. Maybe, but probably not. Why? Because of affinity for matter. Because of affinity for matter, the potency of the hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing this description, or in general hearing any description of Bhagavatam, doesn't fully act because of our affinity for matter. So therefore it's gradual. Gradual. But it doesn't minimize the potency. It minimizes perhaps the effect of the potency upon the soul, the conditioned soul, but the potency isn't diminished because we're conditioned. The sun doesn't shine less brightly on a cloudy day or a cloudless day. The sun shines. Down here, the clouds may obfuscate the light of the sun, so we don't see the fullness of the brightness of the sun. Doesn't diminish the potency of the sun. It diminishes what we experience of that sun. Similarly, my dear Vidura, oh, it is Maitreya speaking, okay. One who hears this narration concerning the understanding of the living entity's spiritual existence, as described by the great sage Narada, or who relates it to others, will be liberated from the bodily conception of life. Will be means, if it doesn't happen the first time you hear it, you hear it again and hear it again and hear it again. And hear it again. And the gradual cleansing. will take place. The whole of the Vedic process, even the Karmakanda system, regulating fruitive activities, which King Puccini Bari is being recommended to give up, that's a gradual process also. The bhakti process is the elevator, as opposed to the staircase method. Realization, however, is gradual, because our affinity for matter. But the slackening of the affinity for matter is made possible by the hearing and chanting process. Most effective. And what we hear is especially important, and from whom we hear is especially important. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, as opposed to whatever, and hearing that Srimad Bhagavatam from the proper source, instead of from whoever. And then hearing in a qualitative way where we're eager to understand. And we can, eager to understand implies I'm willing to let go of my material conceptions. My seatbelt's fastened. I'm ready to go, go, go. And one who's not ready to go, just like the discussion we had yesterday about students or somebody that, you know, certain things they don't want to let go of. Aversions or attachments they don't want to let go of. I'm thinking of this nice situation described in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he was high court judge or chief magistrate in a particular locality for a while, and then was moved to another place and to another place. But for a while when he was there, in that locality, I don't know, city or town or village or whatever it was, there was a tree that was ghostly inhabited, and people, out of fear that if they didn't propitiate the ghost, they would get, you know, a bad consequence from the ghost. The ghost would cause disturbance in their life. And so regularly people would go and make offerings at the tree, worshipping the ghost. And that came to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's attention. He wasn't part of his portfolio of being a high court judge, but as a Vaishnav, it was. So what he did was, from his earnings, he made a brahminical donation to one brahmana with the assignment, I'll maintain you. You just sit under this tree and narrate Srimad Bhagavatam. So the brahmana was happy to sit under the tree and narrate Srimad Bhagavatam and be maintained. And on the very day that he finished the last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, a branch of the tree broke, and the voice of the ghost expressed, "Alas, alas, I've been liberated just by this sound vibration," and off he went. No more ghost. Just from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam being narrated by a brahmana. There's potency. It acts. I was thinking to share last night another anecdote, which is while in China this month of July, past month, there were maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 programs at yoga studios or that kind of function. And three times in the audience, when it came to question and answer session, three times person said in Chinese, "I've never chanted before. I don't know what this mantra is. Something happened when I began chanting. I started crying and I started feeling my heart moving, and I don't know exactly even how to describe the feeling. Is everything all right?" No, the potency of the holy name is amazing. The heart may be more open, more closed. And so one of the warnings of chanters is in the language of Bhurijan Prabhu, one should not seek peak experiences when chanting. Certainly, seeking purification or connecting with Krishna, or like our discussion last night, Chakra, you weren't there, was feeling completeness through the holy name with the topic, Om Purnam. Then, we can aspire to feel completeness. That is, what is that completeness? It's being the part being connected to the whole. Connectedness in the mood of service. It's a prayer for service. Not like I want to have an experience prayer. But I want that sense of being connected in service. I don't know if any of you who attended the program yesterday meditated at all as we ended the program. I was thinking of that as we were chanting. Must have meditating like that while having kirtan or chanting japa. It's the heart's open and the holy name goes in. The clouds are separated more and the holy name goes in and touches the heart and moves things. So as opposed to mechanical, purposeful. Last point. In the first part of the purport of the verse that we chanted, Prabhupada starts with his usual, which is material life is but a dream. This material creation is but the spirit soul's dream. The bodies that we get, it's like a dream, it's like the body you get in a dream. One is a daydream, one is a night dream, but it's just a dream, it's not who we really are. And then expanding that is, it's Mahavishnu's dream. And then there's this nice section, detailed section, like 20 verses, in a third canto Bhagavatam, where the unfolding of the elements and the senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses and the objects of the senses, it's described. It's actually there twice in the third canto, but the senses can't act on their own. The demigods, in charge of the various senses, they get together and they pray to the Supreme Lord, we can't do our work. Can you please, you know, assist? Because even the senses are there, the object that they're controlling deities are there. Can't work without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. But scientists will never, besides, you know, figure out how to create bodies, besides robots, to create consciousness, conscious awareness. They can't do that. They can create behaviors through robots, but they can't. It requires the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So when the Supreme Lord sees, then we can see. When the Supreme Lord hears, then we can hear. That's how it works. And then in this point of reference, it's this, when Mahavishnu dreams, then we can dream. And then we can dream, and then we get a body and a mind, you know, a gross and subtle body, a set of senses. And dream, dream, dream. Then how do we wake up from the dream? When a merciful Narada Muni or associate of Narada Muni comes and through sound vibration awakens us from that dream. Not only awakens us, but imparts spiritual reality. And, you know, there's something, just a little social comment, ISKCON social commentary, there's a phenomena amongst some, not all, amongst some of the newer devotees in ISKCON, where for some reason or another, I know at least one of those reasons, but they prematurely are
exploring higher subject matters without even a clue of a qualification to explore those higher subject matters. I was just one example. I was at New York Rathiatra. Somebody I don't even know, a very young person, approached me and said, "You know, Maharaj, can I ask a question? Something about, you know, Siddhadeya question. You know, if you do this, can you get at that spiritual body?" Etc. So here, very nicely, yeah, without, you know, stomping on that spirit, just here's the message, right, directly. One can develop one's spiritual body just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Not only the bodily conception is reduced and eventually eliminated, this means we no longer have to accept hallucinatory, gross, and subtle body, but instead attain our spiritual identity. How? Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So, if you hear something like that, rather than, like, getting disturbed, just repeat, you know, very simple message. Prabhupada says very clearly, your spiritual identity will be known just in the course, natural course, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam nicely. So make sure you do that. And everything will be all right. Any discussion?
Right, on this last topic that you were speaking about, Prabhupada's four basic books, the Bhakti Shastri books, as well as the Srimad Bhagavatam purports, are written in such a way that they're relatively very easy for to understand, even for, you know, someone with my kind of intelligence. But I've been recently hearing your classes on Tattva Sandarbha and Madhurya Kadambini, and I was present for your Brahma Samhita seminar, and I'm finding it tough to comprehend those subject matters.
Okay. A response is, from time to time, two things. From time to time, devotees say, not everybody, but some devotees say, when we have programs, commonly there's new people. So the speaking has to be to address new people and what their capacity to understand is. And so it's nice to hear introductory and introductory and introductory and introductory and introductory, and that's nice. No harm. But from time to time, it'd be nice to hear something that's 201 instead of 101. Second thing is, sometimes there are people that hover around ISKCON that aren't ISKCON. And they like to say things like, you know, you're hearing ABC, that's nice, but there's some higher subject matters. Psst. Come on over here. And so, you know, those higher subject matters are available. It's not different than Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, it's just presented in a different way. And like the Brahma Samhita, the presentation begins with, you know, Prabhupada in 1966. Saying, or 67, saying, all my disciples should study this thoroughly and understand it. Now, he didn't repeat that over and over again, but he said it, you know, and in 1966, he made a recording of Brahma Samhita. You know, he didn't explain mantra upasana, he just did it. And his disciples or followers, he made a recording in a, you know, it cost money when we didn't have money, in a professional recording studio, so he could have, so we could listen to it over and over again and do mantra upasana, without even so much understanding the meaning, you know, or the process. But he, you know, so now, you know, 40 years later, should we understand what the process is? doesn't mean you can't go back to Godhead if you don't understand the process. You can't go back to Godhead if you don't understand Bhaktisiddhanta's language. But it's there. And it's following his father, who is following Jiva Goswami and makes reference to Jiva Goswami in his high English language. So, how to make it simple? Anyway, those are two reasons. Unless we have teachers who can present teachings, we're left either like out in the cold without access to that subject matter, or you know, somebody else will come along and do the psst, I got higher knowledge. Not exactly. Anyway, so it's there. And if somebody, I remember when Nectar Devotion first came out, this was 1970, and it was Prabhupada gave us the mandate that we should have a third class every day. Bhagavatam morning, Bhagavad Gita evening, and Nectar Devotion every day. He wanted us to learn it. And then he started getting these questions, I don't understand this and that and the other thing. So his standard reply, which became known, well known within ISKCON, was, if you don't understand it, read it again. And if you don't understand it after reading it again, then read it again. And eventually you'll understand. That was his reply. The purification comes gradually. So something that today you don't understand, in a year or two or five or ten or whatever, you go back and, oh, that's what that was. It's the purification. And one other point. I listened to Tamal Krishna Maharaj's... I personally attended his first Brahma Samhita presentation in Mayapur, 1990. And then in preparing for that seminar on Brahma Samhita, I listened to it at least 12 times. And then Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj is at least the same number of times. And one of the things that Tamal Krishna Maharaj said was, just hearing this vibration, it's purifying. And he gave the example when they were traveling in India with Prabhupada, sometimes the audience didn't understand English, so he would speak in Hindi, and the devotees, the sannyasis, after kirtan wanted to get up and leave, and Prabhupada was firm and said, no, you stay. And they said, but we don't understand Hindi. He said, but you'll be purified just by hearing. Even if it's in another language that you don't understand. That's the intention. So we're respecting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gave this book to his intimate associates. Everyone knew. He approved it. And then Jiva Goswami wrote his Sanskrit commentary. Our line of Pacific succession made their Bengali, then English presentation of that. So there's purification. The benediction of Lord Chaitanya is there just by hearing it. Even you may not understand it so well. Go hear it again. And then hear it again. For your information, one of the things that I've begun to do is that some devotees are transcribing those lectures that when I have some time I'm going to start editing the transcriptions. So then, you know, there's the PowerPoint, there's the video, there's the text. Who knows, maybe it'll become a book. You know, so people can go through and read it again and read it again along with hear it again and hear it again. Because there's it's in 62 verses, it's the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, that's 18,000 verses. So it naturally is packed. So you unpack it and it's... There's a lot there. Anything else? Yes.
As Prabhupada clearly writes that you want to imitate Supreme Personality Godhead, he's put into dreamland and the material creation. Knowing that why the ISKCON doesn't take an action if there is any conversation going on.
Any kind of what?
Any conversation going on.
Conversation.
Conversation or teaching or presentation on towards the speculative things in the jiva topics.
Why do we take action? What action would you like? Become Parashuram, get a chopper out, and go chase after people? What would you like? Stand by the truth. Anything else? Yes. Yes.
So, I have a comment and a note and a question. So, first I'll ask my question. Connection with the last evening program is complete with that too. So, we talked about the incompleteness and the completeness of to, you know, with the exercise, whatever we gave the exercise. It was also on July 4th, we did the same exercise. So
also, it was, speak slower. Also, it was?
July 4th, when we did this exercise.
July 4th, yeah.
So, it really helped me a lot.
Which exercise?
The writing down
sense of incompleteness and what you do to.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I did really study myself because most of the times I felt that incompleteness. So, I was like, why I got that feeling and all that while writing the exercise. And then I found two things. When I did not focus my attention while chanting on hearing, and then or not connecting, you know, when I did not do that properly, so even if I finish the chanting, I feel that uncomfortable or like that I didn't feel good. Even if
okay, I got it. This is a comment, it's not a question so far.
So the other one is also if I didn't like pay more time or attention to the family. So these are the two things like I felt like incompleteness. Then I started to work on that. What is the solution for that? With the instructions and what Ishwaranathan says, like connecting and paying more attention to family, like quality time. So my question is, it also says in this purport, Narada Muni advises the king rather to take the devotional service rather than wasting time to do the fruitive activities and stuff like that. So when in that practicality, taking my daughter when she goes to schools, so she has to do something like activities that to participate in the school activities. So I don't want to discourage or say no, but also want to make sure like she don't spend more, deviated by that, so she won't be able to do the sadhanas more, just to balance both the things. So how to do that in a balancing way, to in a advising way, in a nicer way to do that so that she won't take it in a right way.
Did you hear the discussion the other day about priority and secondary things? Did you hear that discussion? Were you here for that? You weren't here for that because you're preparing.
Yeah, I was.
Okay, go back and listen to that morning's class. We discussed this point. The context was very different. I have concern about the word balance in the sense that, there's the secular perspective of there's what we do for Krishna and there's what we don't do for Krishna. We just do it because we like to do it. We should do everything for Krishna. And the concern as a mother with your daughter and their extracurricular stuff should be not the balance, but making sure that the priority stays in the priority position. That is, this is connected to the priority. It doesn't displace the priority. It's part of priority. It becomes, read Brahma Samhita text 61 purport. Because the question you're asking is not identical with, but similar to the question that's being asked by Lord Brahma. He didn't even say it. Lord Krishna knows what he's thinking, and so he answers, how you do material things without losing your Krishna consciousness. You connect those things with hearing and chanting. You keep the priority in the priority position, and the conclusion of Bhakti Siddhanta is that's as purifying as the primary. Don't, when doing those of the world things, don't lose perspective. That's the concern. And that's the, you know, not only motherly concern, it's a transcendental concern. And if conveyed from the right place, then, at least in your case, your daughter's going to understand it. You know, still there's risk, even when it's careful. Even you as a mother, or her as a daughter, or anybody in this world doing something, there's risk. Listen to that recording of that class. It's, we discussed it in principle. And then this other, just another comment on your narration. You know, the sense of incompleteness if I don't spend quality time with my family. To me, that's, the natural motherly affection, it's not the kind of completeness that we were speaking about last night. Do you need to say more? You got it?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, watch a mother duck and her little ducklings. There's no transcendental completeness in the mother duck and her ducklings. They just follow Mother Duck. And she's guarding and protecting the little ducklings. It's wired into their system. They don't have to go to duck school to learn it. So the sense of incompleteness, if I as a mother do not spend quality time with my daughter and my family members, that's not the transcendental completeness that we were speaking about. One who does spend quality time with their family may have a certain sense of completeness, and if they're really honest, that still that pinch is there that says, I'm not feeling complete. What we're speaking of yesterday is another standard of completeness, altogether different, transcendental standard of completeness. And again, it's this connecting the secondary with the primary, as you get the idea. Okay. Short.
So, thank you, Lord. Actually, I feel incomplete because of, since I didn't express the gratitude after my home program. So, I had written a thank you note. So, I told her, since I didn't get a time to say the thank you note, so I told her, His Grace, with the Prime Prabhu, that I didn't do that. So, Prabhu said, it's okay, you can read it to me, so you will be satisfied. So, I did read the whole thank you note, thanking everybody who. So only the small thing is like, I want to thank you so much. Thank you, Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, because thank you for accepting, for accommodating all the classes, like Abhishek, Yajna, and everything within the time frame. Even though it was a week days, with your mercy and support, it all went very nice and complete, full completeness. So I want to express this gratitude. So that I feel complete by expressing this. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
And your daughter did well in her exam the next day, too.
She was.
Everything worked out.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Anything else? Sri Radhika.
Guru Maharaj, from the class yesterday evening. So there is a subjective feeling of completeness, and at my stage, there's only glimpses of that.
Sure.
Every now and then, fleeting glimpses of the feeling of completeness while chanting the holy name.
Got it.
Now, I was having a discussion with someone in the yoga class somebody who is also a yoga teacher. And I was quite surprised actually to find out that the entire verse, Om Purnamadam, they can recite it. I mean, you know, just regular people who are familiar with the yoga.
Wow.
They have a real verse.
They have a very different understanding of what it meaning is.
Absolutely. So, you know, there is a subjective feeling of completeness, which, you know, only comes from the chanting of the holy name.
Well, and Srimad Bhagavatam, and association devotees,
yes.
And worship of the deity.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And there are the symptoms of feeling complete. Now, for someone who is not, following those processes, if there are some of those symptoms being exhibited in their lives.
Fantastic.
For example, this person was arguing that, at one point she was looking for a sense of completeness in a relationship with a significant other. And then, when she stepped out of that needy position, she was able to feel complete in herself, then, so now she feels complete in herself. Even though it's not transcendentally situated, there's no, devotional service involved, she's completely satisfied and feeling complete.
Great.
So, I was wondering, for someone who is not open to devotional service, open to trying out chanting, how to make that distinction between, there may be a symptom of feeling complete, but then there's this whole realm of subjective feeling of completeness, which it seems is completely inaccessible.
It's trendy. I mean, it's not... Those that are of spiritual inclination that haven't had association with devotees, they go there like lemmings. Very popular. They may go under a name or not. This brand, that brand, or, ecumenical. No brand. Just the directional. Very popular. Very popular. Because there's no accountability. Same as, your husband's question about a person. No. Don't want to go there. So you can't make that person go there. There's a few things. One is just personal relationship with it. You're not pushing or judging. They don't feel pushed or judged. You're just, being a good example, a model of one who has shelter in Krishna. Another, opportunities for devotional service where they're not like, eat your spinach. You're just engaging them in devotional service. And they like devotional service. But the connection with Krishna is there. And included in that is prasadam. But, it's not just sneaky. It's devotional service. I don't want to surrender to Krishna, devotional service. Okay, devotional service. We don't talk about Krishna so much. There's some opportunity for some service. Like this, philanthropy thing. That's a person who could get revved up with, let's do some compassionate work. And I'll feel connected to this, sense of oneness. Or whatever it is. Fine, there's prasadam and it's service to Krishna. So that's the beginning. And then a third, very important is, when calamity arises, and that person, they may not, come to you as a spiritual person saying, help, my bubble burst, my sense of completeness just went somewhere, however they say it. I know you're a spiritual person. And then you gently, not with a sledgehammer, but titrate the message in a way that because you've gotten close to the person, what they may resonate with. It takes a lot of patience. And while doing that, maintain the priority in your life. rather than, you know, it gets obscured by that friendship and then affinity for that friendship, and then Krishna disappears, and your shelter is, you know, where'd that go? So doing such things, there's risk. Not doing such things, there's risk. So beware of the risks involved in doing or not doing. So the precaution for the risks is shelter taking. Clear. It can in fact be an impetus for you to be more clear than you were before, you know, you met that person. You know, to what degree am I like that too? I like being comfortable. And I'm not so comfortable being surrendered. Something else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.